We know the Mets are a good team, and we know the Mets have a lot of magic this postseason, but what we've never known is if they have the bullpen arms to make it through an entire October gauntlet. This is the one thing that they really do need to still be concerned about, and this showed up in the Game 2 loss to the Phillies. Carlos Mendoza pushed all the right buttons. The problem was he didn't have a lot of buttons. I'm told that Phil Maton was not available. Ryan Stanek was not available. He was right to get Edwin Diaz in that seventh inning to face Kyle Schwarber, who he has dominated this season. And then Diaz made the fateful decision to pitch around Bryce Harper in the eighth. He threw a fat slider to Bryson Stott, so it was really a matter of Diaz not executing. And then really, if that's not happening and you don't have other guys to help you out, it's a tough situation in the bullpen. If you want to look at a bright side for the Mets in that front, it's that the Phillies' bullpen is clearly a mess, too. They've blown two against the Mets in the first two games, in a sense. So that's what's going to be interesting over the final few games of this series, that battle of attrition for the bullpens. But there's no doubt that a concern has opened up in this Mets' magical run.
You guys have bounced back from a bunch of losses similar to this. How do you expect the team to come out Tuesday?
Same. We came back in the ninth inning after losing the lead. So off day tomorrow, and can't wait to play in front of our fan base. It's been a while, so we'll be ready to go.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, October the 7th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast, a reaction edition to the disappointing Game 2 loss as the Phillies even the series 7-6 on a wild Sunday afternoon affair. Finally, a day off today, and I come to you on this early Monday morning to get a reaction to yesterday and set up what will be a very interesting couple of games at Citi Field. But I'll start with this. There's a couple of old adages that really are at play that I thought about after the loss yesterday. A tough loss. I don't feel it was the same gut-punching loss that Milwaukee was in Game 2, because you were just a few outs away from a champagne celebration. But this was up there in tough losses because the Mets had an ability to step on the Phillies' throats and really put the hammer down and put the Phils in a tough spot coming back north to Citi Field. But they always say a playoff series doesn't really get started till the home team loses. Well, the home team lost on Saturday in Game 1. And if you rewind to about a week ago, I said on the spaces with our friend Anthony Rivera over at X, if you rewound to top of the ninth, Game 3 in Milwaukee to today. But let's go back further. The week that just was, a week of baseball that here in New York, at least as Mets fans, we haven't seen maybe ever. Sure, you saw the 1999 Wild Pittsburgh 3-game Arizona series, and maybe that's about as comparable as there is between the Friday night when they had to sweep the Pirates that weekend, go to Cincinnati for the one game, then go to Arizona, and then by the following Saturday, Todd Pratt walks it off and the Mets are in the NLCS. But with the three cities, the ninth inning comebacks, how close they were to elimination a couple of times, I would say this takes the cake. But after the Mets lost to the Brewers in a bullpen game where the Brewers shut them down on a couple of hits on Saturday night about a week ago, and you got up on Sunday and the Mets were playing at 3 o'clock and you knew they had to win a game, They had to win that Sunday game if anything was going to happen going into Monday. At that point, if I had told you, hey, I'm going to give you something to sign right now. Here it is, Sunday, 2:45, 15 minutes before the Mets play their final, what was their final scheduled game before the doubleheader. If I have you sign this, the Mets will survive this week and they will come back to Citi Field, and a week from now on the off day, it'll be a 1-1 series against the Phillies with the Mets having a chance to close the series out at home to go to the NLCS. Would you take it? I don't think there's a Mets fan on this planet that would have said, nope, that's not good enough. I'm going to roll the dice and take my chances to see if this thing could be better. And through six innings yesterday, or through two outs in the sixth inning yesterday, it nearly was better. And then, like I've been saying this whole postseason, baseball players making baseball plays, the small things that count, there were three pitches that really turned the game around. And not only that, there was a few big plays, but they're not the plays that the mainstream is going to tell you about. Severino and the mistake he made, and really two mistakes to Harper and then Castellanos. Diaz, what a hanger to Stott. And McGill, what a hanger to Castellanos. All those big hits that the Phillies got, all those plays that will go down in Philly history, especially if they win a championship this year, they were all the result of a poorly executed pitch by each one of those individuals. Now, the big plays, they're not as overt. I thought the two-out single in the sixth by Turner, where Severino could have got through the inning clean, was a big, big play. The Clemens infield hit off of Buto completely changed the complexion of how that inning was going to play and brought Diaz out earlier in the seventh inning. And then, obviously, I've been saying it all year, and the Mets have done a much better job with this in the postseason, but walks kill, and the walk to Turner by McGill was a killer. Now, Harper is a different story. He tried to go after Harper. He just fell behind Turner. And I don't know if that was just execution of pitches or he's afraid to throw to him anything fat and try to get him to go fish and chase, which Turner can do. But I'd rather Turner almost hit a home run there than you walk him and set up the inning. So that's kind of where the ball game is. And let's face it, the Mets are in a position now. They've been on the road a couple of weeks. They've had these wild wins. Harrison Bader even talked about how this has brought the team together. Now they come back to Citi Field, where I think they've been like 33-12 over their last 45 games. They turned it around in a big-time way in the second half of the year at Citi Field. And let's see if they could close this thing out at Citi Field, because Citizens Bank Park is a tough place to play. This was not like the Wells Fargo Center and the Knicks going down to Philly in the spring to play the Sixers in the postseason, where it was Madison Square Garden South. And, you know, the whole story was, how are the Knicks fans taking over the arena? Which they did in the first couple of games that they went down there, specifically in the game, game four, that Sunday afternoon game. And then to a lesser extent when they came back and clinched it later in the series in game six. There were Mets fans down in Philly. There always is going to be Mets fans, just like there's going to be Phillies fans that are going to come north to Citi Field. But you did not hear those fans in any way, shape, or form. And they certainly were not overtaking and making it a home game for the Mets down in Philly. And that's happened at times in the regular season, where basically there's a lot of Mets fans that go to the ball game, and all of a sudden you feel like, well, yeah, it's Philadelphia, but it's friendlier confines. I mean, you heard a quiet Philadelphia crowd after the Vientos home run in the ninth, and you heard from the broadcast the Vientos primal scream, but the Phillies fans did a great job. And now it's the Mets fans' opportunity to do a good job. And I talked about this on the Twitter spaces, and a lot of the fans had given me feedback that this is not going to be like 2022. This is not going to be what I call the novena crowd, where the fans go, they come into the building tight as a drum, they sit there on their hands waiting for bad stuff to happen, or they sit there praying, saying, please, baseball gods, please don't make this bad. Please don't give us the pain that inevitably is going to come. And they put a tension into the air that you could cut with a knife. And I know what they say, well, the players have a responsibility to play better and eliminate that, but you're adding to the complexity of a very intense ball game against an opponent that's really good. So we'll see if this raucous Citi Field crowd, if the Mets fan over the last couple of weeks, as we push away from the yoke, as we push away and eliminate some of these two decades plus old weights that have been on this organization's shoulder that maybe was lifted when Lindor's ball went over the wall on Monday, and maybe was lifted even more when Pete Alonso's ball went over the wall on Thursday, and maybe when the Mets came into Philadelphia and stole one late in game one, a game that they really, by all odds, with the way Wheeler was pitching, like a modern-day Mike Scott or Oral Hershiser, had no business winning. Maybe all that's allowed some of the karma, the negative karma, to be thrown in the garbage. But what remains to be seen is, can the Mets and the Mets fans show the world, show the baseball world, that Citi Field is every bit the raucous home field advantage that Citizens Bank Park has been for these Phillies since their World Series run a couple of years ago. And it has to be. It really has to be. Because this team is going to need the fan base. They've accomplished a lot on the road the last couple of weeks in a lot of ways, and I've said this before, that I almost like this team on the road better than at home because it takes away that burden of expectation, that burden of playing in front of the home crowd, the tightness that Citi Field sometimes elicits. And sometimes as a offensive environment, it's a little bit easier to hit in places like Citizens Bank Park in Milwaukee. But now the Mets need the home crowd. The Mets need some home cooking. And for the Mets, the best probabilistic outcome to advance to the championship series against either San Diego or LA would be to wrap this thing up at home. I don't think anybody on the Mets wants any part of a Game 5 on Friday at 5 o'clock, assuming that's where it'll stay. I have a feeling if series wrap up sooner, that might turn into a night game, a primetime game, but we'll see. And Zach Wheeler with the shadows, and then potentially that might be a Severino start, a Kodai Senga opener, we'll see. So the Mets have an opportunity now, and you would have absolutely signed up for that a week ago, to clinch this thing, send the Phillies packing, the 95-win Phillies, a team that was on 100-win pace for a big chunk of the beginning of the year. And really, after their loss to the Mets in London, they were already starting to tail off a little bit. But they were not the same team. They were essentially a 500 team in the back half of the year. And the Mets were about 10 games better than them. I think they fell behind by about 17 games at one point. And both the Mets and the Braves only finished 6 behind. Look, that's another win a month. The Mets have a normal season in May, and I think we're talking about possibly the last few games of the year, not only making the playoffs, but potentially challenging for a division. And maybe they have those games at Citi Field, games one and games two. But alas, that's not the reality of the situation, and that's not worth the conversation. So the real thing here that should concern you, and I think over the next 24 hours, Carlos Mendoza is going to have to figure out, is the bridge to Diaz. Now, we've talked about it over and over again, the blueprint. Starters going 6 innings. Hey, if you get them into the 7th, even better. You get 3 outs from Diaz. And then the question is, can you get those 6 outs to get the ball to Diaz? And then you tie yourself at the hip to Diaz. Which again, as Diaz goes, so do the Mets. And yesterday, Diaz did not get the job done. He barely got the job done against Schwarber in the 7th inning. Diaz did not have good stuff. He did not have his command. He did not have sharpness to his slider. And what is he throwing, over 100 pitches, almost 130 pitches in a week? Historical for a closer. And rather than coming on here and recite some of the concerns I had about Diaz over the course of the year, starting to question after the elite career 2022 that he had, starting to question if he's a championship closer, I now have to question if the Mets really are putting him into the best position possible to be successful. because I think what we want out of Diaz is for him to be Mariano, or for him to be the closer against the highest leverage part of the lineup, no matter whether that's starting in the late seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning. And I'm not sure that that's fair to Diaz. I don't think that's the kind of closer he is. I'm not sure that he can go more than maybe four outs at any given time, and that's iffy. I think the best scenario for Diaz, and this is unfortunate, because in a world of analytics where the best hitters don't always come up in the ninth inning and the game isn't always decided in the ninth, where clearly some of the highest leverage situations started in the seventh inning with Schwarber up and runners on. And I don't know if Diaz is built to be that kind of closer that's going to come in starting as early as the seventh and get you through, certainly not the entire ball game, but a big chunk of the outs you need to close it out. I don't know if he's that guy. Now, maybe because starting last Sunday, he had to get those final three outs, even in a 5-0 game against Milwaukee. Maybe the use, what happened in Atlanta, how he had to come in early. The use of the bullpen, and you heard Andy Martino on the way in, really because they had to get into the playoffs, and they've been playing playoff games for weeks now. And the fact that really the circle of trust was very thin. It was Maton, it was Diaz really late, and they were mixing and matching guys like Danny Young and occasionally an Ottavino and Jose Buto and, you know, Reed Garrett, who was not always trustworthy. So really going into the postseason, the only guarantees that you had, even Ryan Stanek wasn't always good. He was starting to pitch better down the stretch, but he wasn't always good. The only guarantee you had was that you had Diaz, who had a really good September, and Maton, who ever since he took the ball and came over from Tampa, was about as good as a setup man as you could get. But everybody in that bullpen, I'll put Diaz aside for a minute, everybody in that bullpen could give you really big numbers and big results, and certainly are good arms, but they are by far nothing anywhere in the realm of a guarantee. If you look at what the Phillies got, I know Strom blew a game and Hoffman blew a game, and Orion gave up a home run to Vientos earlier. To Alonso earlier in the game. So the Phillies bullpen hasn't been great at all, and they've got a little bit of their Samson with their hair cut off kind of thing going on there. But those guys had elite seasons. Hoffman had a great season. Strom had a great season. Estevez had a great eighth inning. You know, he's, if you want to talk about an advantage, I mean, who would you rather have getting the last three outs for you in the ninth inning, Estevez or Diaz? I mean, really, when you have that, the fact that we're having that conversation here in the playoffs is a huge indictment on Diaz. And I don't know if I would say that's because of the overuse. I mean, Diaz all year has been spotty. And that will be a topic in the offseason, and that will be something to look for in 2025, assuming he'll be here, and he probably will be. So the Mets went into the season with a fungible bullpen. They had injuries, and what Stearns has done throughout the year, rather than go after a big-name bullpen arm, which would have cost them prospect capital, look at what San Diego had to give up as they rebuilt their bullpen, is value-driven guys with upside. I mean, guys like Stanek and Maton have been incredibly successful in other stops in the postseason. But those were different years, and those were different teams. And right now, and maybe it's the overuse, particularly for Maton, it's not likely that when they come in that you could guarantee me that they could give you a quality inning. It's going to be a sweaty inning. Look, 6-1 in the ninth inning on Saturday night was a bit sweaty. And that should have been a rocking chair situation. So now the question is, how does Mendoza play this starting on Tuesday? Because you're going to probably get a good outing from Minaya. You hope that you get the ball to the bullpen in the seventh inning with the game either tied or with the lead. And Minaya is usually good for, you know, six innings. Maybe he can get you in the seventh inning. You know you have three outs from Diaz. How are you going to get those three outs? That's going to be the challenge, because what happens on Tuesday, if Schwarber, Turner, Harper come up in the seventh inning, are you going to put Diaz in and say, okay, that theoretically will be the last time those three come up if you have a clean eighth and ninth with other members of the bullpen? Or are you going to roll the dice and go with a Stanek or a Maton or Buto again or Reed Garrett? What will you do on that situation? That's a question. And then it gets a little bit clearer, because I don't think they go to Diaz in the seventh inning. Will you put Diaz in the eighth inning if Schwarber, Turner, Harper, and I'll even put, you know, further down Castellanos and stuff like that. Are you, you know, are those guys in the seventh, eighth, and ninth, are you saving Diaz for those guys? And then will you push Diaz much past those three outs? And how do you feel about Diaz in general, but also with the kind of usage he's had over the last 7 to 10 days with him going more than three outs? See, what we've talked about is we want Diaz this time of the year, how they've built him up with not over-pitching him or pushing him. Think back to July when we were like, why is he not available against Aaron Judge when the Mets are about to sweep the Yankees at Yankee Stadium? When they've babied him a little bit and made sure that he wasn't overused in regular season stretches where wins always matter, but where you should be able to navigate certain teams without pushing out your top A bullpen arms at all times. But we want him to be Mariano. We want him to be able to come in like Mariano used to be able to come in. And Joe Torre knew he had six outs locked, eighth and ninth inning, every playoff game. He knew he had all he had to do was figure out sometimes 3 to 4, depending how deep the starter went, with guys like Stanton and Jeff Nelson. Also guys that on other teams might be closers. So he had a great bridge, but his bridge didn't have to go very deep. His bridge was a shallow bridge because he would have his starters would go six innings, maybe go into the seventh. And then it would be Mariano for two innings. But I think Diaz is not that closer, and not many have been that closer since the 90s. Diaz is more like Eckersley. You're going to get three outs, you're going to get the last three outs, and that's it. I don't think he could go more than an inning. I don't think it's smart to pitch him more than an inning. Look, I give him tons of credit. Even though he didn't have his best stuff in Milwaukee on Thursday, he was able to keep the game close so that Pete's home run mattered and was able to happen. But let's be very honest with ourselves here. This is not a bash session of Diaz. I'm not here to question if he's a championship closer. I think that that's a fair question, and I think that's something that is still up in the air, and it might be something that, depending on how the rest of this postseason and series goes with Diaz, we really may be talking about in the offseason or the postmortem. And it's become close. Look, it was a conversation that absolutely would have happened. We talked about this if he didn't come back and close the deal in Atlanta a week ago. But now that's not the conversation. The conversation is, how is Mendoza going to handle the bridge to Diaz? Because right now, I think the best blueprint is keep Diaz in the ninth. I don't care what part of the lineup he's facing. Get your six innings out of your starters, quality six, and then figure out after that sixth inning, do you want to push them into the seventh? If the Mets are up 3-2 on Tuesday, and Schwarber, Turner, Harper are coming up in the seventh, and Manaea's at, let's say, 90 pitches, 95 pitches, I'm inclined to push Manaea, depending on how he's looked to that point, to at least get Schwarber. At least. And then figure it out after there. And nobody else, to me, elicits a lot of confidence. Now, I know that Maton is going to be the eighth inning guy, because when they took the lead on Saturday night, Mendoza was going to him. He was going to him. Now, I'm assuming Diaz, because he got warmed up, was available, but he was not going to have Diaz pitch the eighth against the top of the lineup, which makes me think that he's going to stick to that blueprint and keep Diaz in the ninth. I think out of desperation yesterday, knowing that that was the big spot with Schwarber, he went to him in the seventh. And I don't think he was going to get the ninth. I think they were going to try to get him through the big part of the lineup and then figure out probably with McGill the ninth inning because Maton and Stanek were not available. So how do they handle that? You know you have Maton for the eighth. You know you have Diaz for the ninth. Is Stanek your seventh inning guy? He's one of the top ones. Is Reed Garrett? And then this was brought up by John Harper, but I also brought it up on the Twitter spaces after the game. Do you start to rethink David Peterson? Because he wasn't crisp at all times, but he got you three big innings behind Senga on Saturday. He walked a couple of guys, but he was also pitching to that gnarly part of the order, and he was able to get through it. And maybe right now, and you can't look towards Game 5. I mean, maybe Severino starts Game 5. Maybe Senga comes back and starts. But, you know, who knows how they're going to play that. That's a conversation for a couple of days from now, if it's even necessary. But does Peterson become that guy? Do you deploy somehow Senga in any of these spots? I don't think so. I don't think Senga's a guy that you can talk to in the pregame and say, okay, you're going to pitch today. I don't know if it's going to be the 7th, it's going to be the 8th, it's going to be the 6th, but you're going to pitch. Be ready. I think he's a guy that needs to prep, prepare, and start the ball game. He's probably got a routine. I'm not just saying that because he's a Japanese player and they tend to have those kind of situations, but I don't know, especially with the injury he's had between the shoulder and what was it, the calf he blew out, whatever he blew out, and things like that. And I got to tell you, here on this Monday, this early Monday morning after Game 2, about a day before Game 3, I don't have an answer for you. I'm usually the kind of guy that says, hey, this is how I would go. I do know one thing, I'd keep Diaz in the ninth. I do know another thing, I think you have no choice, but Maton has to be your eighth inning guy. And I think Stanek is probably the guy in the seventh at this point. You may have to just go Stanek, Maton, Diaz, or, and if that's the top, if that seventh is that gnarly top of the lineup, maybe you go to Reed Garrett if it's more the Castellanos down part. I'm not sure. Buto, who I thought all along was, yeah, I mean, he did great work, but I thought all along because of the way they had to use him as a starter, I don't know how crisp he could be with very little rest. I'm not sure I trust Buto right now. I mean, you really have no choice. I mean, he's going to have to be part of the circle trust. You can't go to the same guys every day. But Buto's really a starter. Maybe you have him as a backup to Sing in a Game 5 if you wind up using Peterson. But I think Peterson is, on that part of the lineup I'm talking about, the Schwarber, Turner, Harper, which creates a lot of problems for a team that doesn't have an elite lefty that in the three batter rule era could make you feel comfortable. I guess Danny Young from a peripheral standpoint is that guy, but let's face it, Danny Young, as good as his analytical back end metrics are, he's a scrap heap pickup. He was a guy that wasn't even on the club at all points during the year. He's a guy that makes you extremely nervous out there on the mound. You know, with the jitteriness, doesn't always throw strikes. Sometimes doesn't know where that slider or a sweeper, whatever the hell. Everything's a sweeper now, wherever the hell that's going. So you're really married to your Stanek, your Maton, and your Diaz. And I know that everybody, and we talked a little bit about it on the spaces, talked about Ottavino, but with his inability to hold a runner on, you know, you walk Turner, that's a double, maybe a triple. You just can't have it. I mean, you know, Adovino's going to have to figure that out in the offseason if he wants to have a career in the pitch clock / no throws over more than twice era at this point. So the big question is, where's the bullpen bridge? Is it a bridge to nowhere? And are the Mets putting Diaz? We keep it saying, you know, as the Mets go, as Diaz goes, the Mets go. Is Diaz a championship closer? We're bringing up all these conversations. But other than the ninth inning, that game last Sunday, Milwaukee, in a very comfortable 5-0 game, the Mets have not deployed Diaz in a traditional manner for well over a week. And his results have not been good. His results were not good in Atlanta. His results were okay, were good in Milwaukee, but he struggled and he had to get some pitches to get out of it. And his results were horrible here in Philadelphia last night. Good sequence to Schwarber, not a good eighth inning at all, and a hanger. So, and a couple of hangers that inning. So that's where you're at. That's a question that I don't know it'll be solved. I think it's going to be something that Mendoza will think about. I don't know if anyone's brought up the Peterson component. I personally don't think he's going to be transparent about it. I think he wants to keep Rob Thompson and the Phillies thinking, because you didn't really even know what Peterson's availability was in the Milwaukee series. You heard about him not doing his throw day to be available in the bullpen. And I know they don't want to go too short with him because I don't think they want to lose the stretched out nature of what he could bring. But right now with Manaea, with Severino, with Quintana, and with Senga now potentially being available, I just don't think his role as a starter, even though he's as good as any of those guys at times this year, I don't know in the postseason his role as a starter, at least through this round. A longer series, a 7-game series, maybe that's a different conversation. But you got to get there. I think his value might be more in the bullpen. I mean, out of all the names I just told you, Diaz is not an option because it's too early. 1, 2, 3, Schwarber, Turner, Harper. Who? If I had to have you pick one, be honest. If you're driving, if you're walking your dog, if you're working out right now, think about it. I say to you, you're the manager of the Mets right now. You've taken over for Carlos Mendoza for this inning. Who do you go? Here's your choices. 1, 2, 3, Schwarber, Turner, Harper. Do you go Peterson? Do you go Reed Garrett? Do you go Maton? Do you go Stanek? Do you go Buto? Are you still on that train? Or do you get wild and say, you know what, I'm going to give Danny Young a try? You know, I'm assuming Danny, you know, it's like they have Ottavino and Danny. Danny Young on the roster. Sometimes I have to actually check and say, are they still there? Because they haven't been used, but they're still there. So there's that. You know, the Mets offensively have been able to put up the crooked number. Sure, they've had to do it late. And I don't think you got a team here that's going to score in bunches every inning. They're going to have a big inning, and then they're going to go to sleep probably. They're probably going to give you scoring in 2 or 3 innings all game. That's it. Mainly, most of their scoring is going to be done in an inning and a half. The offense is not the problem. They're facing elite pitching. It's going to be hard to score, but they're finding ways to score. They're starting to hit the ball out of the ballpark. I think that's going to be important against the Phils because they have good pitching. It's going to be hard to string together hits, especially against guys like Nola. And this is not going to be an easy game here on Wednesday. Yeah, you've got Nola. But let's face it, you know, everybody talks about Wheeler doing his, you know, Mike Scott impression. But Nola, since 2020, has been one of the top pitchers of the sport. Really has. People forget about that. Wheeler's probably been the top pitcher in the sport, but Nola's top 15. You know, Zach Wheeler, by and large, is the top pitcher in the league, top starting pitcher in the league. But even, you know, the Phillies, if Ranger Suarez comes back, he's been really good the last few years. You know, Nola is very underrated. Now, the Mets get to him. The Mets hit him pretty well. But over the last, you know, 4 years, you know, he's one of the top pitchers in the league. Bar none. So the Mets have the work cut out for them. I don't know who would come back. I think it was an interesting debate. Anthony Rivera, a good friend, somebody Shea brought up on the spaces. Do they bring Wheeler back in Game 4 if they're down 2-1 to get it back to Citizens Bank Park, having faith that they could figure out with Sanchez and the home crowd and their bullpen that they could figure out a home game? That's a possibility. I mean, that's another whole situation. So those are a lot of questions. Those will be questions that we don't have to answer today. The only thing you have to think about today, and really the only person that matters that has to think about it, is Carlos Mendoza. What is he going to do with that bridge? And is it time to acknowledge that Diaz needs the ninth and that's it? Maybe you get him the eighth inning with one out. But personally, I would keep him for the ninth at this point. I'd give him the 3 outs. I'd give him the clean inning. I'd let him finish things off that way. Now, the other thing, and you may have to think about this in different terms, Diaz and his numbers at home at Citi Field and Diaz on the road are two different pitchers. I don't know if it's the crowd, if it's circumstances, whatever. But all year, most of his meltdowns and horrible situations have been on the road. Citi Field, he's been dominant. So does that play into your decision-making and your ability to be confident that he could get the job done in the more unorthodox closer way? Something to think about. But personally, right now, based on what I've seen with the amount of usage he's had, you got to give the guy a break. You got to get him back into a routine. You got to get him back on the ninth inning. You got to normalize this bridge. And look, if Maton spits the bit like he did in Milwaukee on Wednesday, David Stearns went to battle with these arms. You want to talk about getting another closer or signing more elite top-end bullpen help in the offseason? Different conversation. Maybe mix in some certainty with that bullpen with the scrap heap nature and the fungibility of what Stearns likes to do. But that's not a conversation for today. The roster is what it is. The bullpen is what it is. How can Mendoza and the Mets be successful with what they got? And that's the question. What's the bridge? Is it a bridge to Diaz or a bridge to nowhere? And how do they plug that bridge? I think David Peterson's a big part of that. And personally for me, right now, if you told me, Mike, you got to pick someone to get that 1-2-3 out before the ninth inning, before you can really realistically go to Diaz, I might say David Peterson's our best shot. And I might go to David Peterson. He showed me a lot in Milwaukee. He showed me a lot on Saturday afternoon backing up Senga. And he's shown me a lot all season coming out of an injury, disappointment, a guy that historically just wasn't very good. Maybe it was because he was unhealthy. Let's see if he's figured some things out, gotten his health down, and maybe he's a big part of this team now. So we'll see. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this reaction edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Here's my last piece of advice. Rest today. Stay away from baseball. Stay away from the playoffs. You have 48 hours coming up of intense games at Citi Field. If you're going to the ball game, I implore you, let's make this a home field advantage for the Mets. Don't go there to pray to the baseball gods. Don't go there to feel sorry for yourself. Don't go there to sit on your hands and say how much the Mets stink and how it sucks how they've been able to never come up, bring it home since 1986. Don't spend hundreds and hundreds or maybe thousands of dollars to go to that building, and maybe it won't be cold because the weather's been really good for early October, and turn it into a church or a morgue. That ain't going to help the Mets. Booing them isn't going to make it any better. It's just you going out there and expressing 40 years of frustration. It'll make you feel good for about 30 seconds, and then you go home. The Mets need a home field. Look at how the Phillies fans at Citizens Bank Park treated the weekend. Look at how they were when their team was down. Yeah, it was quiet. That's always going to be the case when the visiting team takes you out of the game. But it wasn't the skies falling. There was a certain underlying confidence, I thought, where they were pushing. As soon as the Phillies got Turner on base and Harper was up, that crowd came to life. It wasn't them sitting and waiting for something to happen to get them to come to life. You need to be the 10th man. Don't make this 2022 again. I understand Scherzer took them out of the game right away in 2022. I understand there was disappointment from not winning the division that year. But it's the playoffs. It doesn't matter. The division doesn't matter. 9-19 doesn't matter. 1987 doesn't matter. 2006 doesn't matter. This is about the 2024 Mets, and they deserve two home games where they get the best of the Citi Field crowd to see if that 10th man can help them bring this thing home, or at the very least, bring it back to Philadelphia for a winner-take-all Game 5. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in on this Monday morning to the latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter. Subscribe now, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your day off from Mets baseball. Buckle up. Game 3 tomorrow. Until then, take care, everybody.